1760. That's 212-864-1760.
December 9, 2016 marks the 35th anniversary since the police attempted to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal on the streets of Philadelphia. Now that Mumia is no longer on death row, the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections is denying Mumia and thousands of others similarly infected with hepatitis C life-saving medication. Join international concerned family and friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal on Friday, December 9, 3 p.m. in Center City, Philadelphia, as we rally and demand treatment for those infected with hepatitis C, clean water, and demand the legal proceedings to proceed that could lead to Mumia's case being overturned. To reserve a seat on the bus, call the Free Mumia Hotline at 212-330-8029. Or visit freemomia.com.
Yo, check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
A station dedicated to and sponsored by its listeners. From 1960 to present day, WBAI has been promoting an innovative perspective of news, public affairs, music, arts, health, and science. In order to provide a truly unique voice to New York City, WBAI receives its financial assistance from listeners like you. To help WBAI continue this tradition, you can become a BAI buddy by giving a generous monthly donation of as little as $10. It's a safe, secure, and simple way to support your local station. To become a BAI buddy, go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org.
I say you're my love.
You're listening to Heart of Mind, Earth at Midnight. I'm Catherine, and joining me in studio are
Paulette Spencer
and
Matt Mazza.
Yes, so we are all here with you this morning, and today is a day in December. What is today?
7th. Well, it's the 8th.
The 8th now. So, yeah, it's like the year is almost over, isn't it?
Indeed.
I'm happy to see it go, actually.
Well, you know what they say, tempus fugit.
Yeah, I'm kind of happy to see this year, and it's been a challenging year, and all of the country has been challenged in these most recent elections, and there's been a lot of transitions going on in the world today, and we were going to play a little music in honor of the passing of Fidel Castro, but maybe Paulette, you wanted to say a little something about Fidel.
Wow. I think it's hard to say a little something about Fidel Castro, but from what I really observing and think what I've observed over the years in my interest in international affairs and the state of Cuba and the way it delivers its services to its people, considering the amount of pressure they've been under for all these decades, and the efforts that were made to undo him in so many ways, it's pretty amazing that he survived that kind of pressure and died from natural causes.
Right, and yeah, he lived a very long and fruitful life.
90 years old.
Wow.
And to this day, we know that many of the services provided there, medical services, educational services, are in many ways, in terms of quality, not in many ways, are actually better than in many countries. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their social sector indicators, such as infant mortality, child survival, dedication to the arts, for instance, mm-hmm. Sort of blow many other countries out of the water.
Yeah.
And they also have a survival rate in terms of the age that people die. They're actually on par with the Americans.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because they were very innovative,
yes.
You know, and as things have turned out, the innovative way is the healthier way, you know, the holistic healing and depending on healthy diets, herbs, all kinds of alternative healing that they had there. So it really, really made a big difference.
Black bean soup, the best soup this side of the Mississippi.
Absolutely. And one thing I learned just recently this evening is that I think it was Castro and perhaps, if I'm not mistaken, Chavez, who teamed up to create sort of a Bolivarian alliance amongst countries so that they could integrate their economic systems so that they're more interdependent,
mm-hmm.
Which served as a model for other organizations that were regional organizations that were really there to foster the concept of social development and to foster trade within Latin American and Caribbean countries and really the global South.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a legacy, and I'm really not doing it justice right now, but it's really intense.
Yeah. Well, I remember, the intervention of Cuba in so many of the, liberation struggles in Africa.
Sure.
Was really important.
Well, that's another,
Angola.
Absolutely.
And other countries.
That's another premium. Cuba and African Odyssey. That is an amazing DVD. That really is.
Well, cool. Maybe we'll be offering it next week not on this program necessarily, but we'll be doing our December fundraising drive starting next. Or maybe I think it starts Saturday. I'm not sure, but I'm sure you'll hear it when it does begin, and we'll be here reaching out to you for your support. And it's important in these current times that WBAI Pacifica stay vibrant and alive and here, because if the one thing that the election showed us is that we don't really have a media. We have a propaganda machine, and it is really... has been quite effective in that propaganda, but it doesn't do much to serve the people, in my opinion. I guess it depends on who you are, because maybe some people do feel served by it, but WBAI needs to be here to thrive and grow and to serve. So I do want to encourage people to tune in during the fund drive and support the radio station. Because WBAI is just so critically important. So we're going to play a little music to, which one would you like to play? Just
the Pedrito Martinez, La Havana.
Okay, Pedrito Martinez, La Havana. Okay.
It's lively. I thought it would be nice to celebrate a life with lively music.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly a lively person he was.
Mi guitarra, una tonada de amor. Quise acabarte el muro del corazón. Y aunque lance mi vida por un balcón, siempre en mi canción vive la ilusión de explorar tu piel. Ando como alma en pena, matando la soledad.
Nadie conoce La Habana mejor que yo. De su barrio y lugares tengo el control. Yo te la voy a mostrar, te aseguro la disfrutarás, empezando desde el Capitolio hasta la Catedral. Nadie conoce La Habana mejor que yo. Enamorado estoy de su gente y su malecón. He vivido su fantasía, linda de noche y de día. ¿Qué más te puedo decir? La Habana es la vida mía. Voy a mostrar, ya seguro la disfrutarás, empezando desde el Capitolio hasta la Catedral. Pero nadie conoce La Habana mejor que yo. Enamorado estoy de su gente y su malecón. He vivido su fantasía, linda de noche y de día. ¿Qué más te puedo decir?
Eso también hace falta, nena.
Nadie conoce La Habana.
y que se forme la timbola también la gozadera.
Yo la camino entera.
Si en tiempo de guerra a mí me sirve cualquiera.
Yo la camino entera.
Y ahora que venga el iré, que se vaya la osobera.
Yo la camino entera.
Suspira en su amor, su amor.
Se enamoró la flor de una hoja seca y ahora no sabe qué va a hacer con esa pena.
Pero que mira que se enamoró de ese viejito con sombrero y con bastón nada más.
Se enamoró la flor de una hoja seca.
Una muchacha tan bonita como esa, pero eso fue lo que le gustó, digo yo.
Se enamoró la flor de una hoja seca.
Dicen que la vieron por la casa de la droga y que el son añejo ella disfrutó, disfrutó.
Se enamoró la flor de una hoja seca y ahora no sabe qué va a hacer con esa pena.
Repítelo tú, ¿eh?
Se enamoró la flor.
Se enamoró la flor
de una hoja seca. Y ahora no sabe qué va a hacer con esa pena.
Y hoy que ha pasado el tiempo, la flor sigue en su herida, la hoja ni suspira en su amor, su amor. Hoy que ha pasado el tiempo, la flor sigue en su herida, la hoja ni suspira en su amor, su amor.
Matamoros, a Paco, Portela y el Resuelo.
Que si lo
los muertos vuelven de nuevo, que si los muertos vuelven
y cada uno goza con lo que le gusta, cada cosa tiene distinto sabor, distinto sabor.
Que si los muertos vuelven de nuevo, que si los muertos vuelven de nuevo,
se enamoró la flor de la manzana.
Seca y ahora no sabe qué va a hacer con esa pena.
¡Qué pena!
Se enamoró la flor de una hoja seca y ahora no sabe qué va a hacer con esa pena.
Hoy que ha pasado el tiempo, la flor sigue en su herida, la ahogan y suspira en su amor, su amor. Hoy que ha pasado el tiempo, la flor sigue en su herida, la ahogan y suspira en su amor, su
So that was beautiful music, aside from the shaky start. So tell us a little bit about the two pieces we heard, Paulette.
Well, the first one was called La Havana, and it was performed by a group called the Pedrito Martinez Group. And they are a band from Cuba, but they're based here in New York City. And I've had the pleasure of listening to them perform live, and there'll be a few not so surprising surprises soon in terms of who we get to interview on the air. But I wanted to give you a taste of their work. And I think what I enjoy about this is really the African influence mm-hmm. on Cuban music and music of Latin America in general. And their rhythms are very... very interesting, and the instruments are instruments you'll find in a lot of the very rhythmic music of African origin. And it will be interesting to just sort of trace just the instruments mm-hmm. and the arrangements throughout a lot of the music. The second piece you heard was from a band called Acere. And they are also from Cuba, and I heard them perform at the Lehman Center for the Performing Arts back in September, and this was their first stop on a tour of the U.S., where they performed. I think they're still here. They're now in Florida, and they're ready to return to Cuba. And that song was called La Flor y la Hoja Seca. And I understand that means the flower and the dry leaf. And the word acere actually takes its name from the sacred Efik language greeting of the Afro-Cuban Abacua religion, meaning literally, I salute you. Mm. And it is a common greeting among Cubans, meaning friend or buddy.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And for the last piece, that was from an album called A Favor del Viento, which means in the direction of the wind.
Hmm. Well, that's certainly poetic, isn't it?
Certainly.
Beautiful. Beautiful music. And I wouldn't really call it like fast mambo music, more like danzón. It reminds me of the music... I've never been to Cuba, but I've been to Mexico. And in a lot of the little towns, they always have like a square in the middle of the town where people come to in the evenings or on the weekends, and they often have music. And you see a lot of old couples dancing, but it's kind of a slow dance. It's not really the kind of fast mambo music you see here in New York City. But that's what this reminded me of, that kind of classic sound. It was very nice. So we'll play a little bit more as we go along.
Sure.
But we also have on our schedule today a reading from Matt from our book. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay.
Introduce the book. And
so this is continuation of the reading of Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. And there's a website, ishmael.org, where you can hook up with other readers of this particular book. And I guess you could chat with them, interact with other people. This is a very interesting commentary on the way we live and how things came to be the way they are today. So, we are at chapter 7.
Do you need water, Matt?
I think I'm good. So, Ishmael and his student are meeting, and Ishmael begins. "Here is a puzzle for you to consider," said Ishmael. "You are in a faraway land and find yourself in a strange city, isolated from all others. You are immediately impressed by the people you find there. They're friendly, cheerful, healthy, prosperous, vigorous, peaceable, and well-educated, and they tell you things have been this way for as long as anyone can remember. Well, you're glad to break your journey here, and one family invites you to stay with them. That night you sample the food at dinner, and, finding it delicious but unfamiliar, ask them what it is, and they say, 'Oh, it's bee meat, of course. That's all we eat.' This naturally puzzles you, and you ask if they mean the meat of the little insects that gather honey. They laugh and take you to the window. 'There are some bees there,' they say, pointing to their neighbors in the next house. 'Good Lord,' you exclaim in horror. 'You don't mean that you eat people?' And they look at you in a puzzled way and say, 'We eat bees.' 'How atrocious,' you reply. 'Are they your slaves, then? Do you keep them penned up?' 'Why on earth should we keep them penned up?' your hosts ask. 'To keep them from running away, of course.' By now your hosts are beginning to think you're a little weak in the head, and they explain that the bees would never think of running away because their own food, the A's, live right across the street. 'Well, I won't wear you with all your outraged exclamations and their baffled explanations.' Eventually, you piece together the whole ghastly scheme. The A's are eaten by the B's, and the B's are eaten by the C's, and the C's are eaten by the A's. There is no hierarchy among these food classes. The C's don't lord it over the B's just because the B's are their food, because, after all, they themselves are the food of the A's. It's all perfectly democratic and friendly. But, of course, it's all perfectly dreadful to you, and you ask them how they can stand to live in this lawless way. Once again, they look at you in bafflement. 'What do you mean, lawless?' they ask. 'We have a law, and we all follow it invariably. This is why we're friendly and cheerful and peaceable and all those other things you find so attractive in us. The law is the foundation of our success as a people, and has been so from the beginning. Here at last is the puzzle. Without asking them, how can you discover what law it is they follow?' I blinked at him for a moment. 'I can't imagine.' Think about it. Well, obviously, the law is that A's eat C's, and B's eat A's, and C's eat B's. Ishmael shook his head. These are food preferences. No law is required. I need something more to go on, then. All I've got is their food preferences. You have three other things to go on. They have a law, they follow it invariably, and because they follow it invariably, they have a highly successful society. It's still very tenuous, unless it's something like, be cool. I'm not asking you to guess what the law is. I'm asking you to devise a method for discovering what the law is. I slid down in my chair, folded my hands on my stomach, and stared at the ceiling. After a few minutes, I had an idea. Is there a penalty for breaking this law? Death. Then I'd wait for an execution. Ishmael smiled. Ingenious, but hardly a method. Besides, you're overlooking the fact that the law is obeyed invariably. There has never been an execution. I sighed and closed my eyes. A few minutes later, I said, observation, careful observation over a long period. That's more like it. What would you be looking for? For what they didn't do. For what they never did. Good. But how would you eliminate irrelevancies? For example, you might find that they never slept standing on their heads, or that they never threw rocks at the moon. There would be a million things they never did, but these wouldn't necessarily be prohibited by the law. True. Well, let's see. They have a law, they follow it invariably, and according to them, following this law has given them a society that works very well. Am I supposed to take that seriously? Certainly. It's part of the hypothesis. Then this would eliminate most of the irrelevancies. The fact that they never sleep standing on their heads wouldn't have anything to do with having a society that works well. Let's see. In effect, what would I actually be looking for is, I would be closing in on it from two sides. From side one, I would be saying, what is it that makes this society work? And from the other side, I would be saying, what is it that they don't do that makes this society work? Well, bravo. Now, since you've worked this out so brilliantly, I'm going to give you a break. There's going to be an execution after all. For the first time in history, someone has broken the law that is the foundation of their society. They're outraged, horrified, astounded. They take the offender, cut him into little bits, and feed him to the dogs. This should be a big help to you in discovering their law. Yes. I'll take the part of your host. We've just been to the execution. You may ask questions. Okay. Just what did this guy do? He broke the law. Yes, but specifically, what did he do? Ishmael shrugged. He lived contrary to the law. He did the things we never do. I glared at him. That's not fair. You're not answering my questions. I tell you the whole sorry tale is public record, young man. His biography, complete in every detail, is available at the library. I grunted. So how are you going to use this biography? It doesn't say how he broke the law. It's just a complete record of how he lived, and much of it is bound to be irrelevant. Okay, but I can see that it gives me another guide. I now have three. What makes this society work well, what they never do, and what he did that they never do. Subsection 2. Very good. These are precisely the three guides you have to the law we're looking for here. The community of life on this planet has worked well for 3 billion years, but it worked beautifully, in fact. The takers draw back in horror from this community, thinking it to be a place of lawless chaos and savage, relentless competition where every creature goes in terror of its life. But those of your species who actually live in this community don't find it to be so, and they will fight to the death rather than be separated from it. It is, in fact, an orderly community. The green plants are food for the plant eaters, which are food for the predators, and some of these predators are food for still other predators. And what's left over is food for the scavengers, who return to the earth nutrients needed by the green plants. It's a system that has worked magnificently for billions of years. Filmmakers understandably have footage of gore and battle. But any naturalist would tell you that the species are not in any sense at war with one another. The gazelle and the lion are enemies only in the minds of the takers. The lion that comes across a herd of gazelles doesn't massacre them, as an enemy would. It kills one, not to satisfy its hatred of gazelles, but to satisfy its hunger. And once it has made its skill, the gazelles are perfectly content to go on grazing with the lion right in their midst. All this comes about because there is a law that is followed invariably within the community, and without this law, the community would indeed be in chaos and would very quickly disintegrate and disappear. Man owes his very existence to this law. If the species around him had not obeyed it, he could not have come into being or survived. It's a law that protects not only the community as a whole, but species within the community and even individuals. Do you understand? I understand what you're saying, but I have no idea what the law is. I'm pointing to its effects. Oh, okay. It is the peacekeeping law, the law that keeps the community from turning into the howling chaos the takers imagine it to be. It's the law that fosters life for all. For the grasses, life for the grasshopper that feeds on the grasses, life for the quail that feeds on the grasshopper, life for the fox that feeds on the quail, life for the crows that feed on the dead fox. The club-finned fish that knows the shores of the continents came into being because hundreds of millions of generations of life before them had followed this law. And some of them became amphibians following this law. And some of the amphibians became reptiles following this law. And some of the reptiles became birds and mammals following this law. And some of the mammals became primates following this law. And one branch of the primates became Australopithecus, following this law. Australopithecus became Homo habilis following this law. And Homo habilis became Homo erectus following this law. And Homo erectus became Homo sapiens following this law. And Homo sapiens became Homo sapiens sapiens following this law. And then about 10,000 years ago, one branch of the family of Homo sapiens sapiens said, man is exempt from this law. The gods never meant man to be found, be bound by it. And so they built a civilization that flouts the law at every point, and within 500 generations, in an eye blink, in the scale of biological time, this branch of the family of Homo sapiens sapiens saw that they had brought the entire world to the point of death. And their explanation for this calamity was, what? Huh? Man lived harmlessly in the planet for some 3 million years, but the takers have brought the whole thing to the point of collapse in only 500 generations. And their explanation for this is what? I see what you mean. Their explanation is that something is fundamentally wrong with people. Not that you takers may be killing something wrong, but rather that there is something fundamentally wrong with human nature itself. That's right. How do you like that explanation now? I'm beginning to have my doubts about it. Good. Subsection 3. When the takers blundered into the new world and began kicking everything to pieces, the leavers were searching for an answer to this question. Is there a way to achieve settlement that is in accord with the law that we've been following from the beginning of time? I don't mean, of course, that they had consciously formulated this question. They were no more consciously aware of this law than the earliest aeronauts were consciously aware of the laws of aerodynamics. But they were struggling with it all the same. Building and adorning one civilizational contraption after another, trying to find one that would fly. Done this way, it's slow work. Proceeding simply by trying error, it might have taken another 10,000 years or another 50,000 years. They apparently had the wisdom to know there was no hurry. They didn't dare have to get into the air. It made no sense to them to commit themselves to one civilizational craft that was clearly headed for disaster, the way the takers have done. Ishmael stopped there, and when he didn't go on, I said, "What now?" His cheeks crinkled in a smile. "Now you have come back when you're prepared to tell me what law or set of laws has been at work in the community of life from the beginning. I'm not sure I'm ready for that. That's what we've been doing here for the last half week, if not from the very beginning, getting you ready." But I wouldn't know where to begin. You do know. You have the same three guides as in the case of the A's and B's and C's. The law you're looking for has been obeyed invariably in the living community for 3 billion years. He nodded to the world outside. And this is how things came to be this way. If this law had not been obeyed from the beginning and in each generation hereafter, the seas would be lifeless deserts, and the land would still be dust blowing in the wind. all the countless forms of life that you see here came into being following this law. And following this law, man too came into being. And only once in all the history of this planet has any species tried to live in defiance of this law. And it wasn't entire species. It was only one people, those they've named takers. 10,000 years ago, this people said, "No more. Man was not meant to be bound by this law." And they happened to begin to live in a way that flouts the law at every point. Every single thing that is prohibited under the law, they incorporated into their civilization as a fundamental policy. And now, after 500 generations, they are about to pay the penalty for that, and so that any other species would pay for living contrary to this law. Ishmael turned over a hand. "That should be guide enough for you." Subsection 4. The door closed behind me, and there I was. I couldn't go back in, and I didn't want to go home, so I just stood there. My mind was a blank. I felt depressed. On no rational grounds, I even managed to feel rejected. Things were piling up at home. I was falling behind in my work, missing deadlines. In addition, I now had an assignment from Ishmael that did not fill me with enthusiasm. It was time to buckle down and get serious, so I did something I seldom do. I went out and had a drink. I needed to talk to someone, and solitary drinkers are lucky in this regard. They always have someone to talk to. So, what was at the bottom of these mysterious feelings of depression and rejection? And what had they emerged on this one day in particular? The answer: on this one day in particular, Ishmael had sent me away to work on my own. He might have spared me the investigation I was about to undertake, but he chose not to. Therefore, rejection of a sort. Childish, of course, to perceive it this way, but I never claimed to be perfect. There was more to it than this, however, because I still felt depressed. A second Bergman helped me to it. I was making progress. That's right. This was the source of my feeling of depression. Ishmael had a curriculum. Well, of course, why wouldn't he? He'd develop his curriculum over a period of years, working with one pupil after another. Makes sense. You've got to have a plan. You start here, move to this point, then to this point, and this point, and then voila. One fine day, you're finished. Your attention. Have a nice life and close the door behind you when you leave. How long was I at this point? Halfway? A third of the way? A quarter? Whatever advance I made took me a step closer to being out of Ishmael's life. What's the best bad word that describes this way of taking the situation? Selfishness, possessiveness, stinginess, whatever it is, I'll own to it and make no excuses. I had to face it. I didn't just want a teacher. I wanted a teacher for life. End of chapter 7.
Well, that was interesting. Interesting. Ishmael. Now, for some reason, I forgot the gentleman's name. What is his name? The one who's telling the story.
I don't think he has a name. He's not named.
Okay. I guess I thought it was me. So that's interesting. So there is a natural law that has been in place since the beginning of creation, according to what Ishmael teaches. And this civilization came and discounted the law. And so the question is, what is the law? So I would like to invite those of you who may be listening at this moment to call us and tell us what you think this law is. The number is 347-335-0818. 347-335-0818. So I really like this book because it really does parallel our civilization and the chaos within which we live. It sort of gives us a clue about how we got into this state that we're in right now. So the invitation is out there. If for those of you who have an idea, I have an idea of what it is, but I figure we should wait for our next reading. Do you have an idea of what it is, Paulette?
I'm still thinking.
Yeah. I have an idea. Well, Matt knows, so we won't ask him because he already read the book. But I do have an idea of what it is. But I wanted to see if any of you who are tuned in want to contribute what you think that might be. 347-335-0818. I mean, considering that the civilization are called takers, so I'm sure that that has something to do with it. So you brought in this interesting article, A Protest Victory at Standing Rock, by Dennis J. Bernstein. Beautiful article about this whole interesting situation out in, I believe it's North Dakota. So it's been going on for a long time. It's been going on for a couple of years, actually, but it's escalated over the last year or two. And so finally, the Native American-led protest against an oil pipeline near Sioux or lands in the Dakota drew international attention and support from U.S. vets, prompting the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to seek a different route, reports Dennis J. Bernstein. And of course, Dennis works out at KPFA, a sister station. And was a colleague and with Robert on the show, the morning programs that they did here, Contragate and what was he on?
Undercurrents. And he also, Robert also contributed to Flashpoints.
Right. So, which is the program that Dennis Bernstein does. So I don't want to read the whole article, but you can find it at consortiumnews.com. consortiumnews.com, and so just search out Protest Victory at Standing Rock and you will find this article, or you could search out Dennis J. Bernstein. I have been following the, you know, this whole issue, and it's interesting because this DAPL, I forget what it stands for, but has been hired like goons, really, that were very regressive. You know, they actually sick dogs on these people. They blew them with water cannons. They exploded concussion grenades inside their communities. They sprayed directly chemicals into their face. People have been blinded and maimed as a result of the pipeline. And this is its Energy Transfer Partners. And so this has been going on for a very long time. And what I found really interesting is, other than the alternative media, the mainstream media wasn't paying attention to it at all. And it was only when the vets came to the campsite that the that the media really started paying attention to it, and that the Army Corps of Engineers decided to deny the permit that they needed to go under, I think it's the lake, the Missouri River. So I found that really interesting, because here we have these indigenous people, Indian Americans, Native Americans, original Americans, however you want to refer, being brutalized very much like blacks were pre the civil rights movement. And this has been going on for months and months and months. And so it really speaks to, for me, it speaks to how useless the media can be in terms of really showing what's going on in the country and really looking at the gross injustices that are taking place within our country. So apparently, from what I know, that the veterans and many of the Native people are going to stay there because they don't actually believe that this company is going to stop drilling. And it, in fact, I was looking at an interview with one of the Corps, Army Corps of Engineers, and this is the federal agency that's supposed to be responsible for public lands. But what they've been doing across the country really is just giving off the lands to these corporations to build these pipelines. And it's rather amazing, because within just a few days, they've had something like 2,000 to 3,000 people show up. And so, you know, that pushed the envelope, I think, where people were willing to brutalize the Indians, but somehow felt it was going too far to have the same behavior with the veterans. But I think also the numbers, 2,000, 3,000 people, and these are veterans. So I could imagine that if they use some of these tactics against the veterans, things could easily have escalated. So it's interesting, this whole controversy. What I find the most beautiful about it is that it has been so peaceful on the part of the water protectors. They've been engaged in ceremony and prayer almost the whole time. And so I think that really touched the hearts of people. And when they started recruiting the veterans, initially a lot of these veterans were Native veterans, but then more and more and more people came on board. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, the veterans are like, I swore to defend the people of this country against enemies foreign and domestic. Well, this pipeline is a domestic enemy. And I'm loving it. I'm really loving it, that to see that could happen is pretty remarkable. And but it remains to be seen when Trump comes in what will happen, because he's got a couple of million invested in that pipeline. So we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting.
Definitely. We'll see whether or not he and the Army, the veterans, the engineers will confront each other.
Yeah, well, I think what happens is that the gentleman from the Army Corps of Engineers said, you know, they denied the permits, so legally they can't do it. But what the person said, the representative, said, well, these corporations have so much money, they'll break the law and just pay the fine.
I know.
So it's still up in the air what will actually happen. It's very interesting.
Well,
so I'm going to play a little bit of music, and then we'll be back in just a moment.
Ujjal angelical nan rigla to ura koran regal felta kim te kozikra kinyesh budli komis kinyi la vagia bunzi boyom odishit let lava koran regal felta kim te kozikra. We'll be right back.
That was Sophia, Heart of the Mother, I Am One. And before that, we heard Deep Forest Freedom Cry, Deep Forest Freedom Cry. And really, I wanted to play these pieces of music. Freedom Cry, Paulette brought in, and Heart of the Mother came out of my playlist. And really, it's connected to what we were talking about with the water protectors. And I think that this is really where we all have to reach towards, I think, in our lives. There's so much temptation to fall into violence and anger and conflict. And I don't believe that that can ever really be the answer, because we see the bigger conflicts that take place. But I really think that on the part of those people who are the takers, the exploiters, that's the system that they depend upon. They depend upon the fear. They depend upon reactivity. And they depend upon violence. And so if we, as purveyors of peace, if that's what we are, we really have to find another way of dealing with all of this. And I think the water protectors, the indigenous people out in the Dakotas, have shown us the power of that. But I think what they've been able to bring is what we did see in the civil rights movement as well, which was unity. And when they started this effort, this endeavor, there was very few people. There was maybe a handful of people, 5-6 people. And then a lot of the younger people started taking on activities, and they ran from the Dakotas to Washington in order to protest. And then the word started to get out, and more people came, until they had this great unification of all of the indigenous people across the Americas, even coming from South, Central South America, from Canada, people coming from Alaska, all over the place. And Indian people have not been unified like that since, well, actually never that many peoples or tribes, however you want to call them. Because it rose up to like 500 different groups, and all unified in one purpose, with one goal, with a unified action. And I think that's what's missing in many other efforts to transform the world. When I look at the efforts of our modern day activists, they seem to be... well, that's the emergency broadcast system I hear coming through. And And generally after such a sound, yikes.
That's loud.
Let's see if we can do something with that.
If this had been an actual emergency, official messages would have followed the alert tones. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
Nangulma, nangulma, tikal manang, nanguni. Samarak jala yui, ke am jiseha. Nangulma, nangulma, tikal manang. Rakanda usma senyo, nga ham lima ham teyor atingayo, atingayo. Rakanda usma senyo. Nga xam li ma xam te yor ati nga yor ati nga yor ci la nanguni sama rak jala yi wi te am ci sey xa nangul ma nangul tikal manang nanguni sama rak jala yi te am ci sey xa nangul ma tikal manang rak ndaw suma seño nga xam li ma xam te yor ati nga yor ati nga yor rak ndaw suma seño nga xam li ma xam te yor ati nga yor Tingayo. Dafa di yalla ken munul xeciok mom buy ñor du tago buy jël du tago mu tiam mbay tiago fatima woni brimak mak ma sa politique dikri armiyat ma brim armiyat ma mañ ko ba aram sala
piece was called Rakando by Yofaya or Yofia, Yofaya. It is from a CD on rhythms, really. You know, there's African, Brazil, different rhythms from the diaspora on this CD. We're going to play a little bit more music, but before going to that, I wanted to remind folks that if you have a mind to, you can join me this coming Saturday for a moving meditation class, Qigong class. So I invite you to join me at Studio Maya, and it is Mind Body Healing Series. The address is 603 Bergen Street in Brooklyn, and you take the 2 of the 3 train to Bergen Street between Carlton and Vanderbilt. And the series goes from, it's tomorrow till the Saturday until the 31st. What is Saturday's date? The 10th? I think it is. The 10th to the 31st. And so we'll be doing the relaxation with Qigong, anchoring into the earth, connecting with cosmic flow. We will hold and move energy through our body, deep tissue relaxation, self-applied massage and acupressure, standing meditation and moving meditation, jade body techniques, turtle longevity techniques, remedy routines, and bone marrow washing technique, the liver cleanse, and trance dance. So those are the things that will be covered over the 4 weeks. And also coming up on December 21st, the last of our spiritual support group meetings for December. And our topic will be the 11 Eternal Principles, Moving Beyond the Power of Attraction to the Power of Creation. And that is going to be at Jnana Yoga Wellness Center, 97 Bond Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11217, on the ground floor. And next month, I'll be offering a 5-part series in Soaring Crane Qigong for Optimal Health at the New York Open Center. And if you want to find out more about that, you can go to the website qigongonline.net, QIGONGONLINE.net, qigongonline.net. Qigong is spelled with a Q. And I also have a website, katharyn.one, katharyn.one. And you can always connect through email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. heartofmindradio@gmail.com. And for those of you who would enjoy a program such as this in the daytime, you can find Heart of Mind Radio on the Progressive Radio Network every Friday morning at 10 a.m. So now that I have those bits of announcements out, let's play a little bit more music as we move through the final moments of the show. And just to remind you, coming up will be Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. We're going to hear Caras Lindas by Susana Baca and El Son de la Santiaguera by Ibrahim Ferrar. All right, let's hope the right one comes up. And please stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf. And return again to join us. Well, actually, next week is Fun Drive. So we'll be fundraising next week. So please do come and support us.
Ella era una flor. Cuando pasan frente a mí se alegra de su negrura todo el corazón. Las caras lindas de mi raza prieta tienen de llanto, de pena y dolor. Son las verdades que la vida reta, pero que llevan dentro mucho amor. tienen su ritmo, tienen melodía, las caras lindas de mi gente negra, las caras lindas de mi gente negra. Somos la melaza que ríe, somos la melaza que llora, somos la melaza
singer, singing Caras Lindas, which in English means beautiful faces. And the chorus is Caras Lindas de mi gente negras, beautiful faces of my black people.
Beautiful song. Very beautiful. Very tender. I like it. So let's go to Ibrahim for a few moments.
Hermosa, qué lindo el azul del cielo de mi Cuba primorosa.
Santiaguera, oye mi son. Santiaguera, oye mi son.
Qué bellas son las palmeras.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, an interview recorded November 4th with Jack Womack. And, of course, a review from Dan Persons. Stay tuned.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. The title for the new Chinese film Sword Master makes it sound like the most generic wuxia epic ever. And in some ways it is. You get all the expected beats, warring houses, a stoic loner who has forsworn killing, a love triangle. This may be due to the fact that this is actually a remake of the classic 1977 film Death Duel. But it's also an oversimplification. The producer here is Joy Hark, who doesn't do anything in a small way, as such films as Peking Opera Blues and Detective D, Mystery of the Phantom Flame demonstrate. And under the direction of Derek Yee, who was originally the star of Death Duel, the film, which was originally shot for 3D, but isn't being exhibited that way here, can barely contain itself to the screen. That's something of a problem if you're looking for a finely honed narrative. There's almost too much to Swordmaster, what with clan clashes, numerous flashbacks, a mysterious quote-unquote third master with whom the reformed assassin Yen, played by Peter Ho, has a date with destiny, a seemingly invulnerable brothel janitor played by Lin Gengjin, who may not be all he seems, at least one and possibly two betrayed lovers, the introduction of a band of humble outhouse cleaners. I think that's their job, I'm not sure. All I know is they wander through a village proclaiming how stinky their buckets of excrement are. A magic pill that exists solely to keep a key character from exiting the film too soon, and on and on. I spent at least the first half of the film going, who are these people, and how do they relate to what I've seen already? Turns out things make a kind of sense eventually, but I did feel like it would be helpful to have one of those walls they have in conspiracy thrillers, where photographs of people are connected by colored threads, just to clear things up. But in the end, it's not all that important overall. This is a film about spectacle and exquisite martial arts action choreographed by Yuan Bin and Dion Lin, and Swordmaster delivers on all fronts with that kind of burnished, movie reality look that Chinese films do so well, digital effects that make a virtue of their artificiality, charismatic performances by both Ho and Gengjin, and tons of battle scenes that never seem to repeat their beats. Swordmaster may tread some well-worn paths and deliver too much in the process, but too much here is gorgeous, and I downright loved it. In contrast, independent filmmaker Sophia Takal has been making a name for herself with small, semi-improvised dramas that occasionally take turns to the dark. in her latest, Always Shine. Two friends, both actresses, played by Mackenzie Davis and Caitlin Fitzgerald, take a trip to Big Sur in an attempt to repair a friendship recently put at jeopardy as one woman's career has leapfrogged over the other's. It does not go well, with severe consequences, and Tikal brings a unique, feminine perspective to the conflict, which, interestingly, was written by Tikal's partner, Michael Lawrence Levine, who also appears in the film. There is a serious kink here. Tikal has decided to lard the film with fast-cut, semi-subliminal flash-forwards. It feels like a self-conscious attempt to telegraph the darkening ambience. At best, it takes me out of the narrative. At worst, it's downright confusing. Always Shine's relationships are compelling enough and the repercussions intriguing enough that it didn't really need such tricks of the cutting room. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
And thank you, Dan. So, before we get on to the main body of the show, let me tell you that, yes, this is pre-recorded, although only a few hours before it's actually being broadcast. But I'll actually get some sleep and other work done tonight as a result. And most of the show will be pre-recorded. The interview with Jack is about an hour 15 minutes long. But I must promote next Monday's reading. It's next Tuesday's reading, but it's being held on Monday. So if you show up on Tuesday, bring a TARDIS. Outside of that, Monday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at 388 Atlantic Avenue, the Brooklyn Common, same building as WBAI, our annual holiday reading event. It occurred to me sometime back that there has always been a tradition that you see families in December. You watch, the news signing off, and there's like the entire staff, or somebody brings out their kids and stuff like that. And so we decided many years ago to have a family. And in fact, it's the same family each and every year, because we love them and they are a dynamic duo in writing. They are Delia Sherman and Ellen Kushner. And this is a favorite event. It's always well attended and will be even more well attended. That's not English, but whatever it is. It will be even better attended this year because you're going to show up, right? Okay. So Delia Sherman writes stories and novels for younger readers and adults. Her short stories have appeared in numerous anthologies and magazines and in the small beer press collection Young Woman in a Garden. Her most recent novels for younger readers are The Freedom Maze, which won the 2012 Mythopoeic and Andre Norton Awards, and The Evil Wizard Smallbone. She has worked as a contributing editor for Tor Books, co-edited several anthologies. She is a frequent instructor in the children's literature program at Hollins University, as well as Clarion and Odyssey science fiction writing workshops. Next to writing, her favorite occupations are traveling, cooking, and knitting, probably in that order. She shares a rambling apartment in New York City with wife Ellen Kushner, numerous books and far too many pieces of paper, and her website is at deliasherman.com. Ellen Kushner's first novel, complete with the airplane, the cult classic Swords Point, introduced readers to Riverside, the setting she later returned to in The Privilege of the Sword, The Fall of the Kings, co-written with Delia Sherman, and a collection of related short stories. Kushner recorded all three novels in audiobook form for Neil Gaiman Presents from Audible.com, which won the 2012 Audi Award for Swords Point. A new online collaborative prequel to Swords Point called Tremontaine began about a year ago, but season 2 premiered this October. By the way, the Serial Point people will be doing the Nursef reading in May. So bear that in mind. With Holly Black, Kushner co-edited Welcome to Bordertown. I'm a big fan of Bordertown. a revival of the original urban fantasy shared world series created by Terry Windling. She's also written the World Fantasy Award-winning Thomas the Rhymer, and back in the day was responsible for five of the Choose Your Own. Oh, God, she does a lot of stuff, folks. She wrote The Golden Dreidel, which was adapted into the Klezmer Nutcracker for New York's Vital Theater, co-founder of the Interstitial Arts Foundation. She was at NPR for years, doing a great show called Sounds and Spirit. She's had radio drama on WBAI, in fact. Just show up Tuesday, this coming, no, Monday. It's so automatic. I still sometimes try to introduce this program as being on Saturday mornings. Monday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 388 Atlantic Avenue. Admission is free. You will get glared at if you don't contribute. Well, not glared at. We are actually very understanding. But donations are really necessary because, we pay rent. And it costs money to do this and stuff like that there. So, hope to see you then. Our guest this morning, recorded November 4th, is an Hour of the Wolf regular, Jack Womack. I have known him for well over 30 years before his first novel came out, Ambient. I remember